This is the Access Vikings podcast. I am Michael Rand. It's been a couple weeks since Matt Venzel and Andrew Kramer, myself, chatted with you guys, but here we are to do another one. Super Bowl is Sunday. We got some Super Bowl related topics to get to. Vikings aren't in it, obviously.
Yeah, they've been out of it for a while now.
Yeah, Vikings were eliminated a while ago. A
few weeks.
But you know, there's still some related items to get to Vikings wise. You know, first and foremost being the Falcons. If you just want to look at the very basic numbers, you know, 5-0 to 8-8, then a Super Bowl. Can the Vikings do that? It's just that easy, right?
Just that easy.
Just that easy.
As Kyle Rudolph tweeted, and yeah, as you wrote about, right, Matt?
I did write about it. Yeah, I mean, it is possible. Anything is possible.
To quote
Kevin Garnett. There are a wide range of outcomes. The Vikings were the sixth team to do it, and you know, we saw a team go 4-12 after going 5-0 and missing the playoffs. We saw a couple teams make the playoffs, including the 8-8 Vikings team that backed into the playoffs. No real trend there, but the Falcons did show that, you know, a reminder that anything can happen in the NFL. You make the right moves in an offseason, you can take a step forward. I don't think any of us, though, you know, last year the Vikings played the Falcons down in Atlanta. I don't think they didn't have Harrison Smith that game. That was Antone Exum's first start, I believe. They handled the Falcons pretty easily. It was 20-10. And, you know, I didn't remember, you know, looking at that team thinking, this team's on the up and up.
No, and I actually remember looking at that game and thinking Matt Ryan was kind of on the downswing. And then all of a sudden he has one of the best years of an NFL quarterback in history.
Yeah, and it just shows how fleeting the success or failure can be in the NFL when you have that kind of talent in place at times. I mean, it kind of reminds me, too, of the year prior with the Carolina Panthers where the Vikings beat them handedly at TCF Bank Stadium, and then the Panthers went 15-1, you know, and just went and took the NFL by storm. And so it's just so random and chaotic at times. But when you look at this Vikings team, I'm not going to sit here and say they can do what the Falcons just did, but they've got the talent in some right spots. It's just a matter of, like you said, Matt, the Falcons made some key moves, I think, in this past offseason that really, really helped them push them to this point. And if the Vikings can do those kinds of similar things, I think they're close enough.
Yeah, I think as you noted in the show prep, I think the biggest kind of obstacle, though, is, you know, the Falcons kind of have both sides of the ball figured out to a certain degree. And I still don't think the Vikings have offense figured out to a large degree. I think they're trying. I mean, they made midseason moves. You know, Pat Shurmur is the offensive coordinator now. But personnel-wise, if you just kind of go offensive line, wide receiver, you know, there's still a lot of holes on that side of the ball. And it's harder to imagine them making that leap just because that side of the ball is still so worrisome.
Yeah, and I think when you see people give Dan Quinn, the Falcons head coach, credit for kind of what he's built there, it's like it's really easy if you're a defensive-minded head coach, I think, and I say easy relatively, to step into a situation knowing you have your side of the ball to worry about, and, oh, on the other side I have Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. That's a pretty good combination to have, especially with the two running backs, of course, and Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman. I think Kyle Shanahan deserves a lot of credit for what they've done, but to have that talent there, and all they needed to do was fix that defense, and it seems like they've done that with the Vikings. They're in a kind of a state of being the opposite, where they've got so much talent on defense. It's just that lack of top-end talent on offense, and presuming that they move on from Adrian Peterson here, they got to find somebody to step into that star power role. And I just don't know if it's that guy's on the roster right now.
It's a good point. I mean, I think kind of throughout the Vikings' history, you look at it and it's been hard to find seasons where they had both. It's like it feels like they build one at a time and try to get the other one to catch up, and it never quite does.
Yeah, I mean, 09 would have been the year, right? I mean, obviously when we're talking about what they did with Brett Favre, but that defense, I think people forget how good that defense was and
right.
How sound they were just across the
especially
board.
Against the run.
Yes, yeah, and having Jared Allen doing what he was still doing, I mean, that was something where they had both sides, and that was maybe the one year, and then, of course, you lose Brett Favre, and it all comes apart.
Yes. One key thing the Falcons did this past offseason was they signed veteran offensive lineman center Alex Mack, and that, you know, really seems to have really altered their offensive outlook.
Yeah, and I think when you're looking at some of the issues that the Falcons had a year ago was being able to keep Matt Ryan upright. They were cycling through offensive linemen left and right, kind of the way the Vikings were this past year, and to be able to shore up that one spot, you look at the Vikings and you think, is that one spot offensive tackle? I mean, to me, it seems to be.
One spot?
The one, two spots, sorry. Yeah, two, left and right.
Two tackles and maybe a guard, and maybe more than that. But you're right. I mean, let's rank the positions for the Vikings. If we can fantasize for a moment and say they are just one, maybe two upgrades away from being, you know, right back into that title contention, where do you start? Tackle is the obvious one. Where else do you look as game changing, team changing positions where they could upgrade?
Yeah, I mean, I think you potentially need two offensive tackles. Unless you bring Matt Khalil back, you might need a guard, a running back if you let Adrian Peterson go, defensive tackle.
That's a big
assuming
one.
Sharif Floyd won't be back. And even if he is back, I mean, he hasn't shown that he can consistently be on the field and be the guy that they need. You know, it's easy to say they need to find the next Geno Atkins for Mike Zimmer. It's not easy to do. There's only so many guys like that. But getting a guy like that who can play, you know, Tom Johnson did well in a situational role, but getting a guy who can play 70% of the snaps, 80% of the snaps, and get that push up the middle can potentially make that pass rush go from good to great. And then also you might need a linebacker. It's kind of they always pick a late round linebacker, but we still haven't heard what Chad Greenway is going to do.
Which
makes you wonder, the longer you wait for him to announce it, it makes you wonder what he's thinking there.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like a slam dunk that he would be gone when they trotted him up to the podium after the season finale. But potentially you might need a middle linebacker if they move Kendricks to his spot, or they might need another outside linebacker. Maybe they like the guys they have, but that's where I would kind of rank their needs. And, you know, you might need a punter, you might need a kick returner, but I think offensive line, defensive tackle, and running back are the big ones.
Yeah, to me, I think linebacker's an underrated kind of need with what just – I mean, defensive tackle, too, as Matt was saying. Just shore up the middle of that front seven was something where when you saw this team or this defense specifically start to fall apart, it fell apart against the run. And if you didn't have that Sharif Floyd, that disruptive presence who was able to get back there so fast and stop a guard in his tracks from pulling and things like that, they just didn't have that guy this past year. And at linebacker – when Chad Greenway was in there, you saw how teams were able to take advantage of them in the passing game. When they started going after Greenway, the Colts game really jumps out, where they took advantage of him with the tight ends and backs. Andrew Luck just threw at will against their base package. And so that third linebacker, if you can find somebody, I don't know if that guy's on the roster either, who can plug in either a middle or that weak side and be somebody that's not a liability in pass coverage. And let's be honest, too, against the ground, too. Greenway at 33 years old was nowhere near the same guy he had been 5 years prior, and that's going to happen to anybody. So I think there are a lot of needs. It's hard to kind of rank them, but offensive tackle's got to be one and two. And if you're looking at how Sam Bradford, not Matthew Stafford, there's not going to be a trade, I don't think.
Come on. Start a rumor.
If you look at how Sam Bradford could potentially elevate this offense, I think it's just having a matter of two more seconds in the pocket and being able to take those downfield shots that Pat Shurmur really didn't let him do in the second half of the season.
Let's just say for a second they could get a good offensive tackle in free agency and use their second round pick on a guy who developed faster than you would think and was able to start week one. What does that do to the offense immediately?
Well, I think it takes you from such a limited standpoint with what they were last year. They were so limited in their passing game, and I loved seeing the analysts afterwards come after and say, they need to take more shots downfield, because when Norv Turner was here, it was, they need to stop taking shots downfield and protect Sam Bradford. Well, they were so limited with their offensive tackles, they knew going into every game, you can't let TJ Clemmings sit there in 4 seconds of pass protection because it might be a nightmare for you.
Yeah.
And so if you don't have that worry going into a game, or at least you think, hey, there's a 50-50 shot of our guy holding up, you at least then can take those opportunities and those risks. And to see a guy like Adam Thielen grow into the role that he did last year as a downfield threat, just imagine what it'd be like if you could take those shots multiple times a quarter as opposed to just once or twice a game. And that's something where I think you start opening up your offense. Maybe then you might find a running game as well if you have that kind of edge presence, where this past year they were so focused on being behind Alex Boone and behind Joe Berger, because those are the only two guys who can get any kind of a push, you might actually open up your offense a little bit. I think shoring up the tackle spots, it will do so much for what they can do just in variety in terms of their offense. It might be less boring overall.
Would they immediately be a good offense, or is that a stretch?
Well, that's a stretch, because I mean, as Matt can talk about, I don't think the talent at running back, for instance, are you sold that Jerick McKinnon can be a three-down guy? Do they need to add a middle-round running back to, and how's that person going to turn out? Is Laquan Treadwell going to be a number one guy? There's so many other questions too. I just think if you shore up those tackle spots, it gives you the opportunity to find out these other questions, if there's answers, I should say, to the questions.
But I don't think the offense needs to be great. I mean, if it's average and the defense can be what's great, I mean, yeah, Atlanta has made strides defensively, but they're still not a good defense.
They're average, right?
Yeah, they're average. I mean, they have some good young players, and you know, if they continue to add guys, they could become a top 10 type unit. But they're very much relying on potentially one of the best offenses ever. So I don't think the offense needs to be great for the Vikings to go on a deep run next year, and that's why it's reasonable to think that they can, you know, put together a team that can get back to the playoffs and maybe make a run. And it's not going to be easy. You know, maybe everyone keeps pointing to Andrew Whitworth. Who knows? He might end up staying in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
But adding a guy like him would be a good start, a two-year stopgap, similar to what the Raiders did with Donald Penn. He was an older player who people wondered how much he had left, and he has been rock solid for them. And he wasn't there for the playoff game, which is – they didn't have a quarterback either, but that played a big part in it as well. So if they can, you know, solidify that left tackle spot, as you said, use one of the early picks on an offensive tackle and hope that he can contribute right away, suddenly it makes it easier. It improves the depth. You know, if they have another rash of injuries, you know, that's going to hurt. But doing that, it's not unreasonable to think they could get a pretty good young running back in the middle rounds. Look at Jordan Howard last year. I mean, we could go through every year in the draft. And just even doing that potentially can make a big difference to be able to add the tackles on the running game for all the reasons Andrew stated eloquently a minute ago.
Yeah, we're not going to know, February, what is it, 2nd? We're not going to know exactly who's going to be available in free agency in terms of tackles, but Cincinnati's Andrew Whitworth is that kind of veteran that Matt was just talking about. Baltimore's Rick Wagner is a younger guy coming off, I believe, his rookie deal that the team might want to keep but could hit the market. Riley Reiff in Detroit, the longtime right tackle, or who got moved to right tackle recently, but he's been solid for them in the past. So there could be some options out there that you look at and go, okay, there's a guy who at least, unlike a Matt Khalil, has been able to stay healthy and could produce for you. So I think there's options for him out there, which in the draft might not be totally the case either. So.
Did you guys know I covered Rick Wagner in Baltimore when I used to cover the Ravens?
No, I didn't. That's fascinating.
Real quick hypothetical for you, though.
Well, hang on, I just got to take
hey, I'm glad I hung
I'm,
in there.
I'm up now.
I'm glad I hung
what,
in there.
What if there isn't a good offensive tackle available in free agency? At that point, do you make another play for a guard and just try to strengthen the middle like that? Or what do you do? Because you already have – it's not a big contract they gave to Boone, but what do you do there, say, if none of those guys are available or none of them want to come to Minnesota or they strike out on them?
I think at the very least you've got to sign some kind of veteran. I don't care. If you might have to delve into the second tier, you have to – I don't think you can go into next season just with what you had plus whatever you draft. So even if the first tier is gone, you might need something better than the Andre Smith effort, but something where you're at least trying to upgrade with somebody who's done this before.
Yeah, maybe just take a risk on a guy that you don't know everything about. I mean, I think when you go back and look at the chances they took last year, specifically on a guy like Andre Smith, it was Mike Zimmer knew him, thought he had the answers of how to get more out of him, and that clearly just wasn't the case before he ended up having a season end on injured reserve. And so maybe that's just taking a swing on a guy, like Mike said, on some second-tier veteran that you may not know every answer about but might be open to him surprising you. Because what they've done recently with the offensive line has just not worked. I thought Alex Boone, I think he gets a lot of crap, but I thought he was really good for what they needed him to do this year, and he just wasn't able to overcome and really make that group better than their weakest links, which were on every side of them. So I think there's ways to do it, but you're, Matt, if there's not that kind of a guy that you can just sign in and plug in as a starter, I think you got to take some swings on guys and hope then that in the draft you can get multiple guys that could help you contribute. Because can you keep on relying on TJ Clemmings to take that step?
No.
I mean, I just don't think you can do that. And I think the coaching staff has seen enough of him to know that, hey, we got to get other people in here like they tried to do last year. And I think you just got to keep doing that with new bodies. If you do that with the same ones, if you bring back Matt Khalil and you bring back Andre Smith, I think you're asking for more of the same.
It is fitting, though, that it's February 2nd, and based on the movie Groundhog Day, that we're talking about the offensive line, because we do that every year, and it's still bad. Pat Shurmur, what do we know about him? Did we find out enough about what kind of offense we think he'd want to run here in his half season, or was that very limited because he came in here on the fly and had to deal with the limited personnel that he had?
Well, I think it was a unique situation. I mean, Matt can add more to this, but from my understanding of it, he was brought in to not only be the tight ends coach, but then bring some of his ideas to the table on what they can do. And I think you saw his influence in the offense before Norv Turner resigned. That Carolina game comes to mind specifically, where Bradford didn't attempt to pass longer than 20 yards and everything was just short, quick. And that seemed like such a Shurmur influence type game plan. And then when you saw Norv resign, that's kind of everything they did was just short, quick, get the ball out. I think we know who Pat Shurmur is as a guy. You've seen him run enough offenses around the league, whether it was helping out in Philadelphia or running the show in St. Louis. And you know that he's going to be that West Coast style, much more to what the Vikings fans were used to seeing from Bill Musgrave, which can frustrate some people. But I think if that's kind of the efficient offense they need with the offensive line they have, one more offseason, I think, or a full offseason under him could potentially help them get this going in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, it was already a hybrid. I mean, I don't know how much of it was Shurmur's ideas, but it might have been two-thirds Norv, a third Shurmur heading into the year, and then who knows how much it switched. But, you know, it's hard to make drastic changes in the season. I think there was a little bit over time, but I think a lot of it, too, was just the necessity of needing to do these quick throws. So I, for one, am curious to see what it's going to look like if they're able to – you know, get an offensive line together to see what they truly do to open it up. Because he has had a lot of interesting influences, you know, over the years. I mean, he spent a lot of time under Andy Reid, who's a creative play caller. His time with Chip Kelly was 3 years in Philadelphia. And while he said, you know, there were some things that he didn't necessarily agree with, there was also a lot of things that he learned from Chip Kelly, including tempo and things like that. So it'd be cool to see what they do, but, you know, it's also interesting. I mean, Mike Zimmer's been here. He's entering his fourth year. The only guy on the offensive staff that is back from that original staff is Kevin Stefanski, right?
He's been here since 2005, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
but forever. They've had so much turnover, yep. And we saw even more this week with the report from Sporting News that George Stewart is going to go to
Los Angeles, yeah, to
Los
be the Chargers special teams coordinator.
Still getting weird saying that, but,
yeah.
You know, when they announced their coaching changes 2 weeks ago, 10 days ago, whatever it was, it seemed like that would be it. And then they'll lose George Stewart too. So a lot of turnover. I know Mike Zimmer said down at the Senior Bowl that it was kind of a breath of fresh air, but is it a good thing or a bad thing that they've had so much staff turnover?
Do you take anything away from that? I mean, what do you make of that? Continuity is one thing, but he hasn't been afraid to get rid of people who he didn't think were performing.
Yeah, and I think it's good to see, at least from the outside perspective and what they're doing, to understand that, okay, Mike clearly understands that it's not working. They've ranked 27th, 28th, and 29th. Those rankings somehow go together in those 3 years. But the 3 years he's been here on offense, those are the rankings. And so whatever they've been doing, whether it was Norv or Pat taking over last year, just couldn't get enough out of them. And we can talk about injuries until we're blue in the face. But I think the biggest thing is that Mike Zimmer, I mean, he gets rid of somebody like Scott Turner. Who knows the story with George Stewart yet? You know, we've yet to talk to him and figure out why exactly he left. But it would seem like that they needed to clean house and get a blank slate, at least on the coaching staff, in place to understand what they're doing moving forward, because what was working on offense just wasn't coming together. And so I think it's hard for me to sit there and say that it's going to be a bad thing, but I think George Stewart was somebody who was beloved by players, by former players. That's an assistant coach who I think a lot of people had a lot of respect for, and some people can point to Laquon Treadwell and point to Cordero Patterson, but look what he did with Adam Thielen. Look what he did with Stephon Diggs, who a talented guy, but, you know, somebody who had a lot of teams had their reservations about, and he's been able to turn those guys into playmakers. And so I think the loss specifically of George Stewart might hurt them, but everywhere else, I think you look at it and go, yeah, they needed some new faces in there.
Well, if the Falcons provide any one-year blueprint for how the Vikings might turn this around, the Patriots provide the 15-year plan for everybody in the NFL. Seventh Super Bowl in the Belichick-Brady era, which is just amazing.
Yep.
No quarterback has won five, right? Is that correct?
Correct.
Yep.
Montana won four, so that would be...
Terry Bradshaw won
Bradshaw
four.
Won four, so this would be legendary in that regard, elite, as the local coach likes to say. How does New England keep doing it? I mean, aside from just that these guys are really good at their jobs, it is amazing to watch this machine over so many years and players coming and going.
Well, I mean, not to take anything away from anyone else, but they have the best coach in the league and the best quarterback in the league, and that can take you a long way.
Who made who?
I don't know.
I don't know yet.
Come on, we're looking for a hot take.
Mike, when a man loves a woman.
He's a system quarterback. That's the hot take we're looking for.
It's Skip Bayless in there. He'll tell you all about that.
No, I don't know. It's just impressive. It's impressive.
It is. It's amazing, especially, too, to see that this year their defense, I mean, it's hard to tell, you know, what kind of leads to that, but their defense being ranked number one in points allowed, and they shipped out two of their best players in Chandler Jones and Jamie Collins. I mean, that is absolutely ridiculous to think that that's where this group was headed when they're plugging in a fourth-round linebacker in place of Jamie Collins. It's amazing. So, I mean, you got to credit top to bottom not only Bill Belichick, but the fact that they can consistently produce talent at a level for a defense that doesn't get a lot of assets either. I mean, Malcolm Butler goes from Super Bowl hero to now one of the best consistent corners in the league and a number one guy for New England. I mean, how does that happen for a guy who I believe was undrafted? And that kind of a story doesn't happen in every franchise. And you're right. I mean, the head coach and the quarterback should get most of the credit. But to look at to what their defense has done with just, I mean, patchwork pieces that nobody else wanted. I mean, Chris Long, you know, lands there as a veteran, is able to contribute. They squeeze years ago out of, you know, what's left of Vince Wilfork. Just the things that they do, it is amazing to see how they continually buck the trend of keeping talent, and yet where they're at is consistently the best in the league.
Yeah, and you mentioned the castaways they bring in. You know, they trade for Kyle Van Noy, was... You know, the same year the Vikings drafted Barr, you know, I think they had Van Noy in for like a top 40 visit maybe. I mean, I know they looked at him, the Vikings did, and, you know, he didn't pan out in Detroit, and they traded for him, and now he's playing more than Jamie Collins was playing.
Yeah.
Shea McClellan, the Bears first-round pick that they have, and he's playing a role for them.
Yep.
Barkevious Mingo. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just – Jabal Sheard. I mean, Belichick's ability to take in these guys who were just kind of cast off and
but have talent because they were high draft picks.
Well, and I think that's a key too. I mean, you hear players or coaches and GMs say it all the time, but it's finding what guys do well and taking advantage of it, and as opposed to worrying about what guys might not do well. And I know it's easier said than done, but it's in a simple level. They identify what these guys can do. And find a way to take advantage of those skills. And that's just good coaching.
And I don't think any other organization can get away with, at least without a giant PR storm, of signing Michael Floyd after his DUI arrest. And I just didn't see what I would expect. Like, if the Cowboys made that move, if the Vikings made that move, I mean, if any other team made that move, it's, oh, look, they're willing to sell out for wins. And the Patriots do it, and it's, oh, it's the Patriot way.
It's like, oh, they're selling out for wins. Yeah. That's what they always do.
Exactly.
It should be an interesting Super Bowl. Falcons have had a great run. Matt Ryan having a great year. But as of Sunday at around 9:30 p.m., Minneapolis will be on the Super Bowl clock. We're 1 year out almost from the Super Bowl being at U.S. Bank Stadium. You guys have your countdown clocks? Are they running yet?
I've got multiple ones, actually. I've got an alarm on my phone, too, for 2018. Do you have your countdown clock, Matt?
Do you really have that?
No, of course not.
I was going to say.
Can you even do that?
I do not have a countdown clock.
I'm just at a phone reminder.
You probably could, 2018.
Super Bowl, February 4th.
I take it one game at a time, guys.
Do you?
So you don't. You're telling me you don't have a countdown clock.
No.
Okay.
Matt, you probably don't care as much about this as Andrew and I do, but I think Minnesotans get to be very insecure
very.
About events that we host, just especially winter events.
Because, what are they going to think about us?
Will they like us?
Are they going to like us?
Are they going to like us? Matt? I don't know.
I see we have stories in the newspaper every once in a while. Who was the latest? Oh, Vince Vaughn. Vince Vaughn was like, oh, I like coming to Minneapolis to drink beers. And everyone was like, yay! Oh, yeah. It's like
Woody Harrelson was here to shoot a movie. Yay!
He said good things about it. But I don't know. I feel like you get that everywhere, though. Like, this person taped a movie here, and they said they liked the restaurants here. And everyone's like, yay, we feel great about ourselves. Right. I don't know. I like Minneapolis. I've been here 3 years now. It's a fun city. I met some good people. I met you guys, so it's cool.
What do you mean by you guys? What's that supposed to mean?
Hey, we kind of invited you over for to watch the Super Bowl with our children ages two and under, and you said no.
Were you including us in the good guys, or were you saying I met some good guys?
And then there's
and
you guys.
And I also met you guys.
Yeah. What are you trying to say with this, Matt? Just come.
This
out
just
and
makes
say
me think. Remember when we had Master on to say goodbye? And yeah, like it was Master was leaving to go to the Washington Post, Master Tespassian, and we're sitting here and he was like talking about how you were like the nicest person he met in Minnesota, and then it was just like moving on.
And also I met Matt.
Yeah, I also met Matt.
And Matt.
So this is kind of like that.
Oh, that's sad. That hurts my feelings.
But it's likely going to be cold here. That's just a fact. Yep. People are going to have to get over it, but I mean, you can still party when it's cold. You just don't party outside. Is that going to be okay with everybody? I know the bars are going to stay open until 4. I saw they just got the permission for that. Just like, you know, when they have other big events like the All-Star Game in 2014, they did the same thing.
Yeah, we'll talk to Maureen Bausch, too, shortly, the CEO of the Minnesota Super Bowl Host Committee, and she'll be able to shed some light on what they're thinking. But, I mean, if Indianapolis 4 years ago, 5 years ago could hold the Super Bowl, I would think Minnesota, Minneapolis could do a decent job. Because, I mean, we've been to Indy a few times for the Combine, and I don't think it's anything real special as a downtown or as a city. Now I'm going to have the two people from Indianapolis light up my email. But
I think the good thing about Indianapolis is that it's thought out pretty well. It's all kind of tightly connected.
So true.
Even though there's not a ton of, like, amazing things there, you can get around and have a good time pretty easily in a nice compact area.
Lucas Oil Stadium is kind of away from downtown, almost in the same vein that US Bank Stadium is away from. And though you've got the Skyway stuff, and that'll be nice. I think what Minneapolis is going to try and do is keep everything indoors as much as possible for people. Knowing that the last 2 years we've had basically snowstorms right around the time of the Super Bowl here in Minneapolis. So might get a little bit cold. But who are the celebrities that Minnesota can trot out for this? I can't imagine Bob Dylan is going to make any kind of appearance when he won't even return phone calls for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Michael Rand.
Garrison Keillor, big Super Bowl.
Yeah, right. Exactly. We just don't have like the actors or the musicians.
Josh Hartnett live here or something?
He was from here.
What about Josh Duhamel? Oh no, he's just a Vikings fan from North
Dakota. He's from North Dakota. He's from my home state.
So when North Dakota hosts the Super Bowl, you guys can.
I would love to see North Dakota host the Super Bowl. I don't know where they would play
in Bismarck.
You'd have to have it like in a big open field on like the nice day in July.
It'd have to be like an NDSU's facility, their stadium. That's where it'd have to be. I guess. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It'd be great.
No, but you're right. We don't really have a lot of the celebrity star power aside from our athletes right now.
Yeah.
Sid is probably one of our biggest celebrities.
Sid and Lindsey Vonn, they can do some event together.
Maybe the craft beer folks will do some big thing and just keep everybody
bees in
drunk and warm.
Looped up, as Tom Brady once said.
There you go.
Drunk and warm all weekend.
Hey, we have a light rail now that'd be able to connect people at least. It's better than when there wasn't the
very
light
good
rail.
Light rail system, I will say.
Especially since it's very airport friendly, it's going to get a lot of traction that weekend.
And they'll have events at the Mall of America too, so they're going to have to be shipping people back and forth from there. But apparently, though, you can make a lot of money if you hate Super Bowl.
We're going to do this. You want to should we start our conspiracies now? Matt and I live a couple blocks from each other, both are homeowners in the same neighborhood. Which one of us should rent out our house, and which one of us, and who's going to stay at the other one's house that week so we can make some cash?
I don't know, Mike.
Okay.
I haven't thought about it.
Okay, I'm putting you on the spot because I think there's some money to be made here. You know, a few bedrooms for a week and a half for whoever the highest.
I'm trying to think.
We make like, how much do you think we can get for our one of our houses for like a 5-day Super Bowl festivities?
God, if they knew Matt lived there, there should be a disclaimer on it, but.
Wow. What was that supposed to mean? My wife keeps me in check. Mm-hmm. I'm a very neat person.
Like,
okay. I don't like clutter.
I'd love to see your Airbnb listing where it's like, must be willing to take care of 2 giant dogs.
Yeah. Please take the one with you. I won't tell you what he did yesterday.
According to NBC News.
I bet we could get a few grand for one of our houses.
Is it really like people paying that much?
Yeah, according to NBC News in Houston, Airbnb is telling them that Houston homeowners are expected to rake in almost $4 million between 5,500 people who are staying Saturday night in Houston right before the Super Bowl.
We're reasonably close to the light rail.
I'm guessing you don't have a one-bedroom apartment like I do that could go for apparently $1,000 a night. Do you guys have the luxury homes? Is that where you fall in?
But are they talking like downtown for these?
Yeah, they're talking about probably condos downtown. Probably. Yeah, that's probably and nicer places.
We're somewhere between one bedroom and luxury.
Yeah, somewhere between. So that means you're between $1,000 and $10,000.
We should consider it.
Yeah, let's get this.
You sure you want to like live with me for a week or a weekend?
I'm not sure at all. I think though,
everybody's got their price.
But like think about it. What if we could make like a few grand and then we reinvest that in a nice family vacation for all of us?
Oh God! So wait, we'd have to spend more time together.
No,
at the end of
separately.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Separately.
All right.
For sure, separately.
That sounds lovely.
For sure, separately.
Oh my god.
Well, like Andrew said, Maureen Bausch from the CEO of Minnesota Super Bowl host committee is set here to join us from live from Houston, where I'm sure she's getting a ton of tips and other stuff as they get ready for the 1 year out. So we'll welcome in Maureen here in just 1 second.
All right, and I'm joined here by Maureen Bausch, CEO of the Minnesota Super Bowl Host Committee. She's down there in Houston right now. Maureen, I'm really eager to get your thoughts on what you're seeing down there in Houston and any potential ideas that can be taken away for a Minneapolis Super Bowl next year.
Well, the Houston Host Committee has done a marvelous job here. It's absolutely a fabulous Super Bowl, and the NFL has done a beautiful job with the NFL Experience and all the other things that they do. It's really a wonderful setup. So we're learning a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure you're sticking busy, too. I'm just seeing the emails coming through about how much the Minnesota committee is doing down there to prepare and kind of pick up information. What do you think is the most important part for the Minnesota committee to pick up during Super Bowl week in preparation for what you guys will be doing in a year?
Well, you know, if you talk to Dave Hazelman, our chief operating officer, you'd find him finding different things than I do, different things than Wendy Blackshaw, and we have all gone our separate directions because there is so much ground to cover. And we have our entire team down here throughout the week, off and on. For me, I think the most important thing was the volunteers. They have an amazing volunteer program. They're your first touch point in many situations and your last touch point. And they're so important to helping people have a good time, and they are excellent. They're amazing, from the security officers to the uniform volunteers. We haven't found one that wasn't informed and kind.
Well, I think that's an underrated part too, just in general of not understanding, I think, from the outside perspective of how much volunteer work goes into hosting an event like this. I'd read you guys need to, once you come back here to Minneapolis, you guys got to find something like 10,000 volunteers. Is that number right?
Oh, yes. They might even have more here. It's a little bigger city than we are, but someone told me they had 15, but I think it is 10,000 down here. And they're all wearing red jackets and easily able to be spotted. And they go out of their way. I couldn't find a restaurant the other night, and someone walked me 5 blocks that they made sure I got there. And the security officers, of course, come from all over, but they are well educated about where things are in the city. And they stop, they pull up the Google Maps, and they help you, even though they can't leave their posts. So it's pretty cool.
Well, how do you go about starting that process here? Once you get back to Minnesota, do you guys already kind of set the legwork for finding those kinds of volunteers? How do you get that kind of a force together?
Well, actually, we have quite a few thousand committed through our founding partners. So we're already ahead of the game with our founding partner companies who want their employees to volunteer. And then in March, we'll go live with our Rostify system. It's a volunteer registration system. And We'll start interviewing people this summer. Everyone will be met personally, every one of the 10,000 that we end up with, and many, many more to get to that 10,000. Because some people, you know, when they find out what the jobs are, they might say, oh, that's not for me.
Yeah.
But so you certainly meet many, many more than you actually use. And then the training starts and the uniform fitting and the deployment.
And then all the more work. Yep.
So if someone is interested, they just go into our website, mnsuperbowl.com, and register, sign up for our newsletter. And then we will alert them when the Rostify system goes live.
Okay, well, good to know. Now, in terms of just Houston itself and the Super Bowl week coming up, I mean, everybody knows, obviously, what you guys are going to try and do, make it that 10-day kind of event leading up to the game itself. What kind of events are going on in Houston that you guys can pull from that are different, perhaps, from what happened in San Francisco or in years past? And what kind of other locales do you try to pull from when you're planning for Minneapolis specifically?
Well, you know, we've been going to Super Bowls now for a few years and picking the best practices to emulate. And here, you know, they opened it, Super Bowl Live, they call their city activation. They opened that on Friday evening, and it was great. And Saturday and Sunday, Live was open, and the NFL Experience was open. And so the local Houstonians, you know, really got to take advantage of that. And there was local music. The media is all set up and ready to go by that time. Their live execution is great, and it's different than ours will be, but we've learned quite a bit from that. There's several big name concerts that are in the market, and we're excited to utilize our venues for that. We went to opening night. So we know where that's going to be now in Minnesota, I believe. And so it was fun to see what we do and not do on that one. That's also open to the public. So we're walking away with a lot. I just went to a press conference with Lady Gaga. It was very, very fun. Very fun.
Oh,
she
I
is
bet.
One special entertainer. She is really good. Yeah, everyone was buzzing about that today.
No, I bet. Now, in terms of just looking at some of the events that are going to be coming here and the celebrities and all that kind of stuff, I know the pitch that you guys had made a couple years back was about the Bowl North and trying to accentuate the winter. I mean, how do you make that appealing to people who are going to be coming from all over the place? And do you draw from the New York Super Bowls and some of the other cold location areas that has been recently?
Yes, New York did a great job. They used Broadway, and not unlike us, they had a mountain, but it was a sliding hill. And Indianapolis did a city event. They were very urban also, and they did a zip line. So you know, the good thing about the winter activities in the Bold North is we certainly can't hide February, so we need to embrace it. But the Olympics start 5 days after our Super Bowl. And so people are going to be tuned in to winter athletes, and so many come from Minnesota that it's just kind of a natural for us to showcase winter sports and some of the really fun things we do, whether they're on a snowmobile or a fat bike or on a pair of skis. It'll be fun.
Absolutely. Now, you bring up a lot of the outdoor stuff, though, in terms of Minneapolis and when you're planning this whole event out, I'm sure a lot of what's going to be happening this Super Bowl week in a year from now is going to be focused downtown. How do you try to make sure that the whole city is kind of connected with the stadium and everything that's going on? And I'm sure there's going to be things at the Mall of America, too. How do you keep that connectivity together, and how do you expect Minneapolis to kind of feel energy-wise during that week?
Well, the truth is that stadium is secured a few weeks before the game, so we really won't connect to the stadium until game day.
Okay.
However, the beautiful architecture of that stadium will be emulated in other things we do, but getting people around the stadium ahead of time, it really won't be what we will do. We'll keep them focused coming out of the convention center where NFL Experience will be, although I think they're changing the name of that, but it will be in the convention center and then spilling out into the areas more closely associated with the convention center.
Yeah, and when you're bringing up the convention centers, I mean, I'd read, too, that Indianapolis, one of the studies you guys done or read, that Indianapolis had seen an uptick in 20% of its conventions and bringing in business the years after the Super Bowl. When you're studying these locations that have had it recently, what are the biggest takeaways and benefits that it's been happening to those cities where they've had it?
Well, the NFL told us a long time ago, we can host it or we can use it. And Indianapolis used it. And they used it to really showcase what they could do for big winter events. And that's the model that we've chosen. And so we're hoping for an increase. We're hoping to see that. But it is something little that you do 100 times during that week that create this fabulous experience, from how you greet people at the airport to how they're treated at the stadium and in the convention center, and the action on Nicollet Mall, and you know, we'll have greeters in the hotels, and all those little touches make for the one most wonderful experience. And that is what Indianapolis did so well. They had 100 points of contact, and they used every single one of them.
Can you look at all to the 1992 Super Bowl and the way that Minneapolis had hosted it, or has the city itself and the event itself changed so much?
Well, it's much larger now. There were probably close to 1,000 media in 92. Now there's 5,000.
Yeah.
So everything is just a little bit more complex. However, when you talk to people, the media, they took the media out to Lake Minnetonka and let them ride snowmobiles. They are still talking about that 26 years later. So I think that's going to have to be in the mix.
Oh,
they all want to get on a snowmobile. But, you know, they like the winter. They're excited to come back. They said it was one of the most enjoyable experiences they had. And we are welcoming not only the media, but really marketing to families and young adult entertainment seekers, as well as the game goers.
Definitely. Well, I can't imagine Gloria Estefan will be the halftime act again for that one.
No. It's too bad Lady Gaga is doing it this year. She would have been great. She is going to put on a great show, I think.
Yeah, I'm looking forward
to
it.
And her parents are here with her.
Oh, really?
It is a family event.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they were there in the audience.
Well, and I'd read, too, that Taylor Swift, Bruno Mars are doing events there. Eric Dickerson's walking around hawking his new barbecue sauce and doing all kinds of stuff. So.
Oh, they're all over. When you go through Radio Row, they're all over. And they're popping up at parties, you know, just small parties that, you know, accounting firms or law firms or different groups are having. And there were 55 Hall of Famers last night at an event. 55.
Oh, wow.
It's amazing.
Yeah, so if you build it, they're going to come, I guess. Now,
we just, sure hope so.
Just a couple more questions before I let you go. I wanted to ask you, could you spill some of the numbers for us? How many people are expected to flock to Minneapolis that week, and just in terms of sheer numbers, and kind of what's the economic windfall that you guys have been seeing from recent Super Bowls?
Well, our marketing plan, which is a 52-week campaign, is designed to draw over 1 million people to the 10-day festival. And, you know, if we do it and we do it right, we should see several hundred in economic impact. That's been proven time and again.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's going to be an issue at all, unless we, I suppose, if we're dumped with 10 feet of snow or something. I can't be held accountable for that.
And it's always possible. Well, definitely. Well, and then just in terms, too, of I mean, are you already seeing hotels booked out that far ahead? Do you have to, what kind of planning already are you in terms of that week a year out, or is that still down the road in terms of businesses really hunkering down for it?
Yeah, lots of hotels are being booked.
Okay.
And I think we're encouraging every Minnesotan to invite their relatives for the week. Take one for the team here and have your relatives come and stay with you and come down to Super Bowl action. We want this to be the great winter get-together, as they say.
Special thanks to Maureen Bausch of Minnesota Super Bowl Host Committee. Thanks to her for joining us, taking some time out of her busy days down in Houston preparing for Super Bowl 51. Let's finish things off with a few Twitter questions. Andrew, what do you got for us this week?
Yeah, Tyler Johnson asks, Matt, besides obviously going after Michael Johnson in free agency, what's your ideal scenario do you see? I guess we can boil it down to, what do you think their top targets should be in terms of position or players.
When was Michael? That was like 2 years
ago. That was a couple.
Was that you that started that whole thing?
I don't think so. I think there's just a...
You made it into like...
It became like a Twitter thing where I just kept asking you. And I even had my wife tweet you like, hey, when are they going to sign Mike? You know, she has like no idea.
Right. I blocked her.
Yeah.
For that. Because I can't block you.
It's understandable.
Wait, what was the question?
You can block me.
Besides obviously going after Michael Johnson, what's your ideal scenario for the Vikings in free agency?
I think it's finding a left tackle who can be a stopgap at the very least for a couple of years, similar to what Boone was, as we discussed earlier. I mean, I don't really know what else. I mean, that would be the home run signing for them. I mean, because you could find a running back in the draft, you could potentially find a guard in the draft.
I was just going to say, that seems like the one place where you might not, you probably can't get exactly what you need in the draft, or at least reasonably hope to, as far as upgrades go.
Yeah, I think the ideal top, I mean, I agree with you guys, it's got to be tackle. I mean, the only other positions I'd see maybe potentially taking swings on guys are they could move on from Anderson Dejo if they wanted to, though I think he'd show last year that he's worth the contract he was getting. But potentially some safety depth, maybe somebody a little more useful at this stage of his career than Michael Griffin was last year.
Or if they think they found like a Linval Joseph type on the other part, at the other defensive tackle spotting, a guy who's... Yeah. Kind of coming into that second contract but isn't going to break the bank, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world either.
Definitely. Barry would like to know your best guess at your week one starting offensive line. Wow, that's a little far out for that.
Is this Barry like Barack Obama?
I don't think so. It doesn't say Barry O. Just says Barry.
Okay.
So I think Barack would have the O on there.
Okay.
Though in terms, I guess, let's rephrase it this way. How many new starters would you expect on the week one offensive line?
Two or three. Yeah.
Yeah, I would expect Alex Boone's the only one I pen in, and assuming Joe Berger's
probably Berger,
at center, it would probably still hold that spot down. Though I think Nick Easton could compete for him with that job.
The X factor is Matt Khalil.
Yeah, whether or not he comes back, and at what price would it take for the Vikings to want to do that? Michelle, I should say, would like to know: will Adrian Peterson restructure his contract to stay, or do you guys think he's leaving Minnesota?
I think we all think he leaves, but that was a good sentence by me right there. I think we all think he's. I did a radio appearance. I wish I could remember where so I could give him a shout out yesterday. But we were just kind of talking about what it would take for him to come back, and what do you think could potentially be that financial sweet spot? I mean, I think the only way he comes back is if he goes to free agency, finds out that, no, people don't want to pay him $18 million or even $10 million, and he, I don't know if he's capable of doing it, but swallowing a little bit of pride by coming back to the Vikings. But if you're the Vikings, how much do you really want to pay this guy, or do you just move on from him altogether? So I was wondering kind of what that sweet spot is where they could potentially find a way for him to come back. And, you know, it's probably in that $6 to $8 million range, and I don't even know if the Vikings are willing to do that, but it's hard to believe them finding a middle ground, but it's also hard to believe Adrian's going to get more than $6 million a year.
You do wonder.
This to me seems like the place that he could get the most money potentially. Like, this is where he has the most value because they've seen him do this. Who else is going to give a big contract to a 32-year-old running back? Like,
who's coming off a major knee injury.
Nobody.
And averaged 1.8 yards per carry, whatever it was.
Yeah, and at least publicly, the team didn't take any kind of stance against him for going on his own radio show and announcing his injury news at the end of last season and just doing these kinds of things that Adrian basically has done for much of his career, but going on his own path and you know, kind of not thinking about how that's impacting the organization as a whole. I mean, those kinds of things, you wonder too how much that wears thin with him getting that much older and all these things. But you're right. I think if any team is willing to overpay him, it's probably the team that appreciates and understands everything that he's done for them for the past decade. But then again, with athletes, you see sometimes, I think Jared Allen did this a few years back, where he took less money to go elsewhere just because he felt slighted. And who knows kind of where Adrian's head's at when it comes to that kind of thing. Maybe he is open to taking less money to go to Dun-to-dun Green Bay, or who knows?
I don't think he's going to get more than $5 million.
I mean, I'd be surprised to see that, but then again, I was surprised to see him come back and to see them guarantee him $20 million after that 2014 deal. So I can't be surprised if he did get more than five, because I think there are some teams that are that desperate. And let's keep in mind, too, the salary cap is rising by another, what, $10 or $15 million this year. I mean, that's just going to raise everybody's level in terms of financially. So
a rising tide lifts all boats.
It does. I think,
Mike, you want to make one more Adrian Peterson wing bet?
No,
that
I'm
you
good.
Can lose.
I'm good.
You're what, 0 for 3 on those?
I don't know, something like that.
Oh wow. Steve would like to know, will the Vikings re-sign any of their own free agents before free agency starts? If so, who do you think is the most likely to come back?
I have no idea.
They have 19 of them. And I think I was just going through the list actually before this, and
how convenient.
It doesn't seem that there are many unrestricted, I should say, free agents that really, I mean, you would think they'd stick around with keeping, because at this point, I expect money to come between their negotiations with Captain Munnelin and Cordarrelle Patterson. I think other teams are just going to value those two guys more, considering where this team's at. I think there are restricted free agents that are likely to come back. Adam Thielen, Zach Karen, guys like that. But who's the top UFA that they might bring back? Is it Jeff Locke on a prove-it deal? Is it Audie Cole? Is it Zach Line? You know, the fullback who had done some decent things for him. So, but I just don't expect to see them retain guys like Matt Asiata. I don't expect them to retain Red Ellison. You know, we'll see kind of where it ends up with the money. Maybe it does work out, but I don't think there are many UFAs that you look at and think, yeah, those guys are coming back. Maybe Terrence Newman, if he decides he wants to.
I would be, like I've said in a previous podcast, though, I'd be very nervous if I'm the Vikings if I let Newman and Munnerlin walk. I think the secondary would be perilously thin at that point. I would not feel good about that.
Yeah, those young guys would have to grow up quick. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, specifically a guy like Mackenzie Alexander, if Captain Munnerlin walks.
Those two guys have been very nice players, very nice security blankets for Mike Zimmer.
Yep.
You mentioned all the, I mean, last year though, it felt like they'd be in the same boat with guys leaving, and they brought back many players on 1 year deals, guys like Audie Cole, Andrew Sandejo, Red Ellison. So, that was also after they came off an 11-5 season where they seemed poised to make a run towards the Super Bowl. So I don't know if that changes things for them and maybe wanting to bring in some new players. And also maybe the Vikings look less appealing, you know, to stick around on a one-year deal. I don't know. But, I can't say looking at naming all the free agents you just named that, like, this guy definitely has to be back for one reason or another. I mean, Captain Munnerlin seems like the guy that probably is the most valuable of that group, but other teams are going to pay him.
Yeah.
And as he has noted, they drafted Mackenzie Alexander to replace him. So it's hard to see him finding a way to come back.
I've heard he's not going to take a hometown discount. So, yeah, it's going to be something where if another team offers Captain more money, he's probably going to be taking it. So that's where they're at.
Because this is his last big contract probably, right?
He purposely did this. Yeah, right. I remember him saying a few years ago when he came in with Linval Joseph and they kind of build it with Everson. Like, you guys, we want to build – three five-year contracts around you guys, and he's the only one. He was about to walk out the door and said, I am not taking a five-year contract because I need to be hitting free agency before I'm 30, and that's where he's at. He's 29 years old, and that's kind of what he had planned out the entire time.
He also wants to be an every-down player, which he won't be here. He's just a nickel, as he likes to point out. I'm going to miss Captain.
Me too. Yeah. Me too.
We got any more, or is that it?
No, that was it. That was basically
good stuff,
it.
Good questions. Yeah. Good questions this week. Good podcast, good effort. We'll be back at this in another 2-3 weeks, probably to preview the scouting combine. And everybody enjoy the Super Bowl and get ready for. You can't stay at our house, but Matt and I will be looking at Airbnb options for the next year or so.